The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Well, let's start off with a little etiquette action here. 16 questions polite people never ask. While your intentions may come from the right place, you need to think about how a question will make the object of your interrogation feel before speaking. Here are the questions that experts say to put on your just don't say it list. How to tell if a question is appropriate. By the way, the picture in this thing has a wide open mouth with a big tongue sticking out. Asking questions is usually a means to an end. You need information. The person you're speaking with, hopefully, has answers. However, while this works great for what time does the store close or what is your favorite book, it gets sticky when you veer into personal territory, says Sarah Epstein, MFT, a relationship therapist in Philadelphia. Many people may think they're just making polite conversation by asking questions of the other person, but they are actually coming across as intrusive or judgmental, she says. It's one of the most common etiquette mistakes people make. How do you know the difference? A good rule of thumb is that polite people always think about the impact of their words instead of only thinking about the information they want to learn, she says. Boy, how hard is that? You're so cute. Why are you still single? Thoughtful, polite people don't ask about a person's relationship status because they know that it can be a sensitive subject for many, Epstein says. The other issue with this question is the word still, something you should try to avoid because it comes across as inherently judgmental in any personal question. Avoid talking to someone because you're worried about saying the wrong thing. It can be a problem, too. Number three, why don't you have kids yet? Polite people never ask about reproduction because they know that a person's choice, whether or not to have children, can be a very touchy subject, laden with potential landmines. These type of questions often lead to hurt feelings, particularly for those who struggle with infertility or those who have chosen not to have children but continue to receive questions about their decisions, she says. It's not just those without kids you need to mind your manners with around either. So, you look so thin. Have you lost weight? For many people, this may seem like the ultimate compliment, acknowledging someone else's hard work. But unless you know for sure that the person was trying to lose weight and that they are okay with you commenting on their body, steer clear. Polite people avoid questioning or commenting on others' weight at all, Epstein says. Superficial questions rarely lead to fulfilling conversations. Plus, weight loss can have many sources, including illness, eating disorders, anxiety, and grief. Why haven't you put a ring on it yet? Even in couples who've been together for years, not all relationships lead to marriage, and not all partners are looking to be weds, says Jody R.R. Smith, etiquette expert and founder of Manor Smith. The only people who should be asking these questions are the ones in the relationship, she says. If you just want a reason to attend a big party, you should host one yourself. After the pandemic, of course. P.S. This applies online, too. Calling people out on Facebook for relation status is one of the social media etiquette rules that people break all the time. You seem like you're doing well. How much money do you make? Ooh, that's a bad one. The only people allowed to ask this question are professional headhunters doing a confidential salary survey, Smith says. If you are just curious how much your friend, cousin, or neighbor makes at their job, you can quell that curiosity by looking it up on a salary website, she says. Many etiquette rules have relaxed, but asking about money is still très gauche. Conversations don't have to be stilted, though. Number seven. I'm sorry you hear your dad passed. How did he die? Curiosity about someone's death is natural and very human, especially during a pandemic of deadly virus. But this is still one question you shouldn't ask, Smith says. You need to remember that the person you are talking to is in mourning, and that's no time to play amateur detective. You should be expressing your condolences and looking for ways to comfort the mourner, and that's it. Plus, there are generally kinder routes to finding information, like Google, that don't put the burden on the family. Why do you look so tired? You may think you're expressing concern for the health and well-being, but what the listeners like to hear is, you look bad, says Bonnie Tsai, etiquette expert and founder and director of Beyond Etiquette. They may be experiencing some health issues that were causing them to feel more fatigued than usual, or they may just appear that way all the time, she says. There's no need for you to make them feel like they need to appear a certain way that's acceptable for your standards or even society's standards. Number 9. So, who are you voting for? Boy, that's a question you don't ask these days. Politics has been a taboo subject for the dinner table in most social situations because it can alter a mood of a conversation very quickly, Sy says. You can never be too sure of other people's political affiliation and values, and no one likes to be put on the spot by that question. This is particularly important to remember these days when politics, religion, and other hot issues are on center stage. That's for sure. Number 10. Where did you go to college and what's your degree? While this question sometimes happens in social situations, it's a very common in business settings. It's an etiquette no-no in both, says Marianne Parker, a business and social etiquette consultant of Posh Overnight and founder of Manner of Manners. Part of networking is gleaning as much information about a new acquaintance as you can, but asking this can bring up all kinds of uncomfortable issues, including school rivalries or embarrassment over not having a formal degree, she says. Number 11. Why don't you get out more? You may see this as a gentle way to chide your friend into trying new things, hanging out, or even traveling more. However, this question can be perceived as offensive because it sounds as if you are suggesting the person needs more exposure and knowledge and they are uninteresting, she says. This may also be a sore subject if someone doesn't have the same financial resources as you and wants to do more things but can't afford to, she adds. Oh, where is his dad? This is number 12. This is one of those uncomfortable, painful, and unnecessary questions that too often pop out in the moment without thinking, Parker says. This is an intensely personal question. If people would like to talk about their personal life, they'll tell you. Resist asking them to satisfy your curiosity about their family situation. Number 13. Oh, this is a kicker. Are you a man or a woman? We are living in a very different time than previous generations, and gender and sexuality are frequent topics around us. But while it's fine to discuss it in the abstract, it's not fine to pepper an individual about their identity, surgeries, treatments, or anything else gender-related. Asking someone about their gender or sexual orientation is rude, inconsiderate, and in some circumstances derogatory, she says. How true is that? How old are you? This is a perennial do-not-ask question. It's still on the list for good reason, Parker says. We all know people who do not feel comfortable answering this particular question, and that's all you really need to know about it, she says. Why they're not interested in discussing your age isn't any of your business. Similarly, not at all phrases have stood the test of time. Number 15. Why are you parking in a handicapped spot? Any kind of question related to any kind of disability should be nixed, Parker says. It's normal to be curious, but many disabilities aren't readily visible, and your question may lead them to feel uncomfortable or defensive. You're basically asking them to tell you details of their private health history. Anything about physical appearance related to disability or disabilities should be strictly avoided, she says. Oh, this is a kicker one, too. Are you pregnant? There really isn't a safe answer to this question, and that's the problem, says Lisa Marie Groats, etiquette expert and founder of the Golden Rules Gal. She may be pregnant, but if she wanted to know, she would tell you, but more likely she's not. A lot of women carry weight in their midsection. Pointing this out is insensitive and hurtful, she says. Number 17. What religion are you? Just like politics, religious or faith-based beliefs are very personal, and oftentimes questions about religion are based on assumptions like location, ethnicity, or appearance, Groats said. In conversation with another, you might have an idea about someone's religion, but never press the subject unless they bring it up first or they are a very good friend. And this next article has a bunch of pictures of combs and scissors, furniture and food and alcohol and gifts. And the title is How to Know How Much to Tip, The New Rules of Gratuities. For years, Jessica and Erica Miller of Ogden, Utah, have lived down the street from their favorite sandwich shop. Despite its being so close to home, they preferred to dine in and always tip generously when they did. But, of course, they didn't get to dine in during much of 2020. The cafe temporarily closed at the start of the pandemic, then reopened for takeout orders only. So the Millers' new routine began to order online, go to pick up their food, and eat it at home. Tipping never crossed their minds. Dennis and Adele, they drove up, and a waitress ran out to meet them. "I was wondering if I'm doing something wrong," she says, "because you never leave a tip." This caught the couple off guard. Eric attempted to explain, "Because we aren't being waited on, we didn't think tipping was necessary." That made it worse. "She swarmed off," Jessica said. "We weren't trying to be cheap, we just didn't know." The pandemic has been particularly hard on people who work for tips. Some haven't been able to do their jobs at all, while others don't interact with customers the same way. In either case, tips dried up, causing a lot of people to suffer, says Tony Dupree, a professional etiquette coach. Meanwhile, many customers felt the need to tip more, because of the new risk and hardship that essential service workers suddenly faced. "There was no rhyme or reason," says Dupree. "We were tipping based on emotion, and that may not have had anything to do with the service." The service became harder to assess. What, if anything, do you give to wait staff who aren't technically waiting on you to deliver drivers who now, or to deliver drivers, excuse me, I'm having tongue trouble here, or to delivery drivers who now stop at your house several times a week, or to people who do your grocery shopping for you? Just as many services have changed, so should tipping, says Lisa Groats, author of several etiquette books. Some old standards no longer seem fair, and several newer ones will apply long after the pandemic is over. Some new rules of tipping that are likely here to stay. Give more if you can. It's common for tips to be divided between all the workers at a store or restaurant, not just those who interact directly with customers. So giving generously ensures a fairer tip for all. Think outside the cash box. You can also tip with a thank you note or a homemade gift when a business or your budget doesn't permit gratuities. Considering write a review online and make sure to name names. Treat business owners differently. A practice of the past, tipping the boss separately, is no longer necessary. But if she provides you your service, tip her as you would any of her workers. As for specific situations, here's what the experts recommend. Food and drinks. Restaurant workers. Old rule. Leave a tip only when you dine in. New rule. Always tip, even for takeout. Tip. 15-20% when you dine in and 10-15% on takeout or delivery orders. Bartenders. The old rule, dollar per drink. New rule, give more, and tip after each round since the bartenders often split tips with everyone on their shift. Tip $2 per drink or 10-15% of the total tab. Baristas, old rule, leave your change. New rule, give at least a dollar. Tip, a dollar per drink or more if your order is complicated. Personal shoppers, old rule, there weren't any. Many of these services such as grocery pickup are newer. New rule, tip and do it in the app since you are likely to interact directly with your shopper. And the tip should be 10-15% if a tip is already included and a few dollars extra. Home deliverers, package delivery drivers. Old rule, don't tip. New rule, show appreciation if you get deliveries more than once a week. Tip, drink, snack, or $5 to $20 if a package is particularly heavy or large. Postal workers cannot accept cash or gifts worth more than $50 per year. UPS tells drivers to decline tips unless the customer insists, and FedEx prohibits employees from accepting cash or cash equivalents, such as gift cards. Furniture delivery people, old rule, give a few dollars. New rule, give more, especially for large items if they install or assemble something or remove old items. The tip, $20 or 15% of the price. That can be kind of steep if it's a $1,200 sofa. Flower delivery drivers, old rule. The person who places the order tips with those who deliver flowers or other specialty items. New rule. You can't assume the gift giver already tipped, so if you're lucky enough to get such a delivery, pass the goodwill along in the form of a tip, $5 to $10. Personal services. A rideshare driver. Always tip in cash. Ask your driver. The Lyft and Uber apps let you grab gratuities, but some drivers prefer cash, 15 to 20% of the tip. Pet care providers. Don't tip. That's the old rule. New rule, dog walkers, pet groomers, and pet sitters should be tipped, but not veterinarians and vet techs. The tip should be 10 to 15% of the fee. Hairstylists. The old rule was 10%. The new rule, extra cleaning protocols mean extra work. Acknowledge that with a bigger tip. 15 to 20% plus $5 to $10 for an assistant who shampoos your hair. Home service providers. Old rule, don't tip. New rule, tip at your discretion. Painters, plumbers, repair people, and other home maintenance types generally include their labor in the price, but give a bit more if you feel their service was extraordinary. A small gift, a note, or $10 to $20. Hotel housekeepers, tip at the end of your day. Many hotels now do housekeeping by request only, so tip every time you ask them to come. Tip, a few dollars per night plus $5 for any extra requests, such as asking for additional toiletry. The next time you're unsure whether a gratuity is in order, follow this simple rule. When in doubt, tip. The novelist George Eliot asked, what do we live for if not to make the world less difficult for each other? Dupre adds, tipping well is one way to make things easier for someone else. Food for thought. Pass the peas, please. The sleepless princess in Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale was far from the only aristocrat to fuss over a pea. For those of you who don't remember, that's the princess and the pea where they piled mattresses. And she was only identified as a real princess if she felt the pea underneath seven or eight mattresses. In 6th and 17th century France, the vogue vegetable sent the nobility into a tizzy. So great was the craze around eating these bright green mini-treeps in the springtime that Madame de Montaignon, the second wife of Louis XIV, wrote one season, "The question of peas continues. The anticipation of eating them, the pleasure of eating them, and the joy of eating them again are the three subjects that our princes have been discussing for 4 days. It has become a fashion, indeed, a passion." Peas are among the oldest crops in human history, though exactly what constitutes a pea is a little hard to pin down. Just about anything we call a pea, whether a garden pea, snow pea, chickpea, or peanut, grows in a pod and is a member of the larger legume family called Fabaceae, generally pronounced Fabaceae. Oh, I guess I pronounced that wrong then. That's the same family from which fava beans get their name. The peas we eat when fresh, green, and sweet, including garden peas, snap peas, and snow peas, are usually members of the Picium genus. That also goes for green split peas, which tend to be sold dried rather than fresh, and are frequently cooked into soup and porridge. Other type of peas, such as chickpeas and peanuts, belong to a different genera. Sweet pea season is tantalizingly short. The tender stalks and pods pop up as the winter months start melting into spring. Within a few weeks, the plants are overgrown and the peas not nearly as tasty. In fact, as soon as you pick a pea off the vine, its sugars start converting to starch, rendering it less delicate and sweet. Hence why peas are so commonly sold frozen. Freezing them and freshly picked preserved a lot of their desirable qualities. Had the court of Louis XIV enjoyed the luxury of refrigeration, they might not have spent a few weeks every spring losing their minds over some tiny green vegetables. Pasta a piselli. This is a pea recipe. In a large 4 or 5 quart heavy-bottom pot over medium-high heat, add 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil and 1/4 pound of diced pancetta. Cook, stirring often until most of the pancetta has lightly browned all over, and most of its fat has rendered about 7 minutes. Add 1 minced small yellow onion. Cook, stirring and scraping the bottom of the pan until the onion is softened, about 4 minutes. Stir in 1 pound of frozen peas, followed by 3 cups of water and a large pinch of salt. Bring to a boil, then add 1 pound pasta. Cook, stirring and scraping until the pasta is al dente, adding more boiling water, 1/2 cup at a time, as needed to keep the pasta just submerged. Remove from heat, then season with salt and stir in about 15 torn mint leaves, followed by 1/2 cup freshly grated Parmigiano Reggiano. Add boiling water if necessary to give the sauce a thickened, brothy consistency. Serve right away, sprinkling with more grated Parmigiano Reggiano at the table. Yummy. 13 things. Serving up the sizzle on plant-based meat. And there's a picture of what is purporting to be a burger, but it's kind of hard to tell exactly what it is. Number 1. If you tried veggie burgers years ago and dismissed them as rubbery, flavorless hockey pucks, which they were, it's a good time to give meat substitutes another chance. You can find plant-based versions of chicken, pork, sausage, and deli cuts, as well as seafood such as tuna and shrimp. Newer varieties mimic the look, flavor, and texture of the real thing. Some even bleed like beef, giving off that signature sizzle as they cook. Number 2. Clearly, plant-based proteins aren't just for vegetarians and vegans. Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, two of the biggest names in the industry, report that more than 9 out of 10 of their consumers also eat meat. And while only 5% of Americans are vegetarians, many more, about 1/4, say they often eat plant-based meat. If you're new to the meatless meats, this is number 3, you can start by substituting veggie versions of ground meat into your favorite tacos, chili, stew, or pasta sauce. by topping a salad with faux chicken strips. It's pretty easy to incorporate vegan meats into something like that, says Gina Hamshaw, a registered dietitian. It's a different story with a burger because the burger is the star of the show. Number four, buyer beware. Mock meats can be high in sodium and can have as much saturated fat as many calories as a real meat. As for protein, the amount in veggie burgers range from 4 to about 20 grams. 3 ounces of beef contain 22 grams. But the better protein options tend to have more saturated fat. Number five, many meatless manufacturers don't disclose their total emissions, but research shows they generate a lot less greenhouse gas compared to their meat equivalents. One study found that making the Beyond Burger uses 99% less water, 93% less land, and nearly 50% less energy than making a quarter-pound beef burger does. Number six, whether or not these products can be called meat, in parentheses, depends on where they're sold. A growing number of states have banned plant-based companies from using the word on their product labels, even as a qualifier, such as vegetarian. Lawmakers say they don't want consumers to be tricked into buying fake meat by mistake. Some food manufacturers have challenged the laws in court, saying it limits free speech and is intended to protect the meat industry, which it probably is. Number seven, the biggest meat producers in the United States, Tyson's Foods, and in the world, JBS, both now sell their own entirely plant-based lineups. It's a smart sideline. Sales of plant-based meat soared to $7 billion in 2020, and Bloomberg predicts the market will skyrocket to $74 billion by 2030, a 957% surge. Number eight, even fast food is jumping on the bandwagon. Burger King has the Impossible Whopper. McDonald's is testing a Beyond Burger called the McPlant. And KFC is working on fake fried chicken as finger-licking good as the original. Number nine, you can make your own meatless chicken with only two ingredients, as millions of TikTok users learned in a video that went viral last year. Just mix together flour and water, then knead it and rinse it under more water to wash out the starch. You get a dough that looks and sort of tastes like chicken. The trick is a version of a meat alternative called seitan, S-A-Y-T-A-N, or wheat gluten, which has been around for centuries. Number 10, Big Meat has launched an advertising campaign against its plant-based competitors. The Center for Consumer Freedom, which is funded by the food industry, has placed full-page ads in newspapers with the headline, "What's Hiding in Your Plant-Based Meat?" Number 11, Impossible Foods spent years developing a molecule called heme, which, I'm sorry, that's pronounced heme. It's H-E-M-E, but it's pronounced heme. I guess it's like the things on computers called memes, which gives its product a bloody red appearance and beefy taste. For many who find meat unpalatable, meme will be similarly unappetizing. The nonprofit Center for Food Safety filed a lawsuit challenging the FDA approval of heme, but an appeals court later upheld the decision to declare it safe to eat. Number 12, the new frontier of meat alternatives is lab-grown, also called culture or cell-based meat. Grown in test tubes from the stem cells of animals, they are still animal products, but they don't require breeding, raising, or slaughtering. A plant-based option is mushroom meat, which mimics the texture of whole cuts such as steaks and slices and serves like them too. Wow. 13. New alternate meats get all the attention, but don't forget about old standbys such as tofu and tempeh, or simply making your own patties out of whole grains and vegetables. Beans and lentils are excellent protein substitutes, says Carl Hammerschlag, Deputy Director of Food and Agriculture at Friends of the Earth, a nonprofit environmental organization. They're nutritious, inexpensive, and far more sustainable than any of the processed meatless substitutes on the market today. I want a wife. I've never been married, but I've had a few near misses, MRS, period. The Healthy. Wellness from thehealthy.com. What do your stomach pains mean? Where and how much it hurts offer clues to what the problem might be. What a lot of us refer to as stomach aches or tummy troubles can indicate many different things that are happening in the abdomen, not all of which actually affect the stomach. Usually the discomfort we're feeling due to a bit of indigestion or gas or an uncomfortable but fairly harmless intestinal virus, the stomach flu, but certain symptoms may signal something more serious. If you experience any of these pains or any abdominal pain that's severe or persistent beyond a few days, see a doctor so you can get the digestive tract running smoothly again. Heartburn. Burning pain in the center of the abdomen. This feeling is all too common after a big greasy meal. The word is burning, says Lawrence J. Brandt, a gastroenterologist at Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx. It's typically coupled with a bitter taste in your mouth. Acid reflux is a regurgitation of partially digested liquids or foods that have mixed with stomach acid. This acidic mix makes its way in the esophagus and throat, causing a burning sensation. A survey published in the Journal of Gastroenterology in 2019 reported that nearly a third of American adults suffer from heartburn each week. Occasional heartburn is nothing to worry about, but chronic heartburn, known as acid reflux or gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, G-R-D, can lead to more serious problems, including damage to the esophagus if left untreated. An over-the-counter antacid should immediately dampen heartburn symptoms. If it doesn't, you might be dealing with something else. Ulcer, dull burning pain in the upper part of the abdomen. This is the hallmark sign of a peptic ulcer, and usually comes with bloating, burping, poor appetite, and weight loss. The pain can often be relieved by eating or taking antacids. Peptic ulcers are sores on the lining of the stomach or top of the small intestine, and despite what you've heard, they're not caused by stress. Instead, you can blame one of two major culprits, Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori, a bacterium that damages the mucus coating of the stomach, or the overuse of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, such as aspirin and ibuprofen. Symptoms such as nausea, vomiting, blood in the stool, chest pain, or back pain indicate you should see a doctor right away. Appendicitis. Don't have to worry about that, mine's gone. Sharp pain in the lower right side of the abdomen. This kind of stomach pain could spell appendicitis, especially if you have a low-grade fever, constipation or diarrhea, nausea or vomiting, according to the Mayo Clinic. If you do have appendicitis, the pain will likely increase whenever you move around or take deep breaths, cough, or sneeze. Appendicitis happens when the appendix becomes inflamed and filled with pus, often from an infection. Treatment usually requires surgery to remove the appendix before it ruptures and spreads infection throughout the abdominal cavity, and that can kill you. That was my extra there. Irritable bowel syndrome, cramping in the lower abdomen. If you're experiencing ongoing abdominal pain accompanied by bloating, gassiness, and change in bowel habits, either constipation or diarrhea, it could be irritable bowel syndrome. IBS is probably one of the most common gastrointestinal disorders that a gastroenterologist sees, says Dr. Brandt. IBS affects about 12% of the U.S. population, with more women than men diagnosed with the disorder. Though the cause is unknown, problems in brain-gut communication may contribute. The condition should cause weight loss or rectal bleeding. Dr. Brandt, those are signs that something else is going on. Inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, abdominal pain and cramping and rectal bleeding. These painful symptoms often indicate inflammatory bowel disease, which includes Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. These conditions have similar symptoms, which make it difficult for doctors to make a diagnosis, according to the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. Besides abdominal pain, cramping, and bleeding, other symptoms of IBD could include diarrhea, weight loss, kidney stones, vitamin D deficiency, and electrolyte abnormalities. IBS doesn't cause these symptoms. About 3 million Americans have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, according to the foundation. Gallstones, discomforts around the belly button. This type of pain is coupled with dull pain near the shoulder and seems to act up after eating fatty meals. Gallstones may be to blame. And if you're female and older than 40, you've had children, you're at greater risk than the rest of the population. This is because spikes in estrogen, common during pregnancy, may cause these tiny stones to form in the gallbladder. Gallstones go undetected for years and are generally painless unless they get stuck in the cystic duct, a tube that connects the gallbladder with another tube that carries bile from the liver, says Dr. Brandt. Diverticulitis, sudden pain in the lower left area of the abdomen. If such abdominal pain strikes suddenly, along with gas, it may signal diverticulitis. This is another form of inflammation, this time in the small pouches called diverticula, which can form in the large intestine. Diverticulitis is a fairly common gastrointestinal disorder among older adults and is usually caused by eating a diet too low in fiber. About half of the U.S. population over 60 have it. Most people don't have any symptoms, but when symptoms do occur, they usually include abdominal pain on the left side, fever, nausea, cramping, and a change in bowel habits, constipation, or diarrhea. Oops, got to change the page here. Hang on a second. Ah, they're sticking together. How can they do that? Hypnosis to beat a sugar addiction. All my life I've been a sugar fiend, and with two young kids at home, it's sometimes impossible not to have candy in the house. One Easter I really indulged. I didn't even enjoy it. Afterwards, I thought about why I was eating the candy and couldn't come up with a good answer. So I consulted Richard Baker, a Florida-based hypnotist. During our session, he had me focused on a single point, then close my eyes, relax, and listen. When I had sugar cravings, he said, I would opt for something healthier, and I would do this because I wanted to live a long life. When the session ended, I felt refreshed and happy. As for the cravings, the next day I still had them, but I didn't indulge. I passed on a bowl of Hershey Kisses co-worker kept on her desk, instead made a cup of tea. It was as if a switch had been flipped. I had only one session, so it's difficult to say if I'm cured, but I definitely feel that hypnosis put me back on the right track for better health. Way to build resilience. Being resilient isn't about avoiding misfortune, but rather how we respond to it. Resilience means doing well in the face of risk or adversity, says Sunya Luthar, Ph.D., co-founder of Authentic Connections, a company that helps teach resilience and well-being. Recently, we've been all needed to draw on our resilience. We all get depleted from time to time, and the pandemic has drained the resilience capacity of nearly everyone at one time or another, says Ann Mastin, Ph.D., a professor of child development at the University of Minnesota. Even if you consider yourself resilient, you may need a booster dose in especially hard times. To build resistance, the experts suggest the following. Nurture relationships. Set up and maintain a support network before you need it, says Michael Ungar, Ph.D., author of Change Your World, The Science of Resilience and a True Path to Success. When adversity strikes, a supportive friend with good listening skills can make a big difference. And if you want your friends and family to support your resilience, remember to support theirs too. Find a sense of purpose. When somebody needs you, you just cope with stress that much better, Ungar says. Your sense of purpose doesn't have to come from school or work. It can also come from hobbies or volunteer projects, like growing a backyard vegetable garden, cleaning up litter in a neighborhood park, or reading to visually impaired people. That's me. Don't try to banish misfortune completely. Resilience usually refers to how we handle serious adversity. But our reactions to big problems may be informed partly by the smaller setbacks we face in daily life. Everyday stress probably helps us learn how to handle bigger challenges and gradually optimize our adaptive systems. And with that, let's roll over to Consumer Reports. And where last time we kind of ended with an Ask Our Expert section, but we didn't finish it. Is it okay to buy a TV online without first checking it out in a store? It's not absolutely necessary to shop in person for a TV, but there are a few reasons you may prefer to do so. If you want to evaluate a set's overall aesthetics, the closer look you'll get in a store can help you determine whether it's the right TV for you. You may also be able to get a better sense of scale when looking at a 40-inch TV compared with a 55 or 65-inch one. Important info if you're switching to a larger set. But be aware that the TV settings used in many retailer showrooms can be misleading. Retailers tend to boost the brightness and contrast of the display to unnatural levels that you wouldn't use at home in order to create a picture that pops in a store environment, says CRTV expert Claudio Chiacci. If picture quality is important to you, note that this means you might not be able to see the image the same way you would at home. Plus, those settings can artificially improve wide-angle viewing for shoppers. How well you can see the picture when you're looking at a screen from the sides. Before or instead of heading to a store, be sure to do some research online. Start by considering what size TV you want, then do a deep dive into our ratings, which can be viewed anyway. Our experts evaluate hundreds of TVs each year and are able to make an apples-to-apples comparison by testing them in identical lab conditions. My hearing feels muffled, almost if I'm underwater. Do I need a hearing test? Yes. Schedule a hearing test with your primary care physician, an ear, nose, nose, and throat doctor, or an audiologist. This will help you determine whether your muffled hearing could be age-related hearing loss due to factors such as genetics and long-term nose exposure. Get tested as soon as you suspect hearing issues, says Janie Johnson, AUD, PhD, director of the Hearing Aid Research Laboratory at the University of Memphis in Tennessee. That's because being checked out now can increase your chances of getting good results from a hearing aid. Your doctor can also examine your ears for a physical cause of hearing loss, such as an ear infection or earwax, which can muffle sound and sometimes even cause tinnitus. Earwax buildup is more common than you might think. About one-third of older adults have excessive amounts. It's also common among people who use hearing aids, which can physically block wax from leaving the ears. If you suspect the problem could be due to earwax buildup, it's best to let a doctor remove the blockage. Don't try to do it yourself. Using cotton tip swabs can push wax farther into the ear canal, or even perforate your eardrums. CR Insights. Make your coffee feel special. You already know that for a good AM brew, you should start with a bean grinder. Try the OXO Brew Conoco Brewer, and one of CR's top-rated coffee makers. But with Milk Frother, you can go from a good to great, turning that cup into a cappuccino, flat white, and more. Milk Frothers use a motorized whisk to whip the film into a silky smoothie foam. We tried six popular frothers to see how well each created a tightly knit foam across several milk types, both heated and cold. We also assessed how the froth tasted, how quickly it dissolved, and how each tool was to clean. The type of milk you froth does matter. Whole milk is a good choice because it's proteins for a tight-knit, durable foam, says Michael Phillips, director of coffee culture at Blue Bottle Coffee. Milks that have higher fat content, such as half and half, can be difficult to create a tight-knit foam. Milks with too little fat, skim or 2%, produce a texture that is a bit too stiff and dry. As for plant-based milk, Phillips says, oat milk will spirit to others, such as almond or soy. A great hand-filled frother is the Aerolette To Go for $20. You move this cordless wand around the cup to whip up the milk to your desired level of froth. It's a breeze to clean and fits in a drawer, but frothing freehand is not quite as simple as it is with the push-button models, and it won't warm you up your milk for you either. Simple and affordable, the Instant Milk Frother for $40. This frother can heat up milk quickly and well for a third of the price of Nespresso, but its carafe is not dishwasher safe, and it isn't good at frothing cold cow's whole milk or warm soy milk. A fantastic splurge if you're really into this, the Nespresso Aerosino 4, $119. Though much pricier than competitors, it's capable of creating a tight-knit froth across a variety of milks, and it's dishwasher safe, except for the base. The best electric can openers. The ideal electric can opener should be easy to use, quiet, fast, reliable, and low cost. Which of the many options on store shelves tick all these boxes? We took home six top-selling can openers, all under $50, and tested them on a variety of can sizes, from 15-ounce cans of beans to 28 cans of tomatoes, and evaluated how safe and easy they were to use and clean. At Wright, we list them from best to worst so that you know which can openers will pop your tops without trouble and which to avoid. I don't know any of you people have noticed, but a lot of cans are starting to come with pop tops now, which are a whole lot easier to use. The Kitchen Mama at $29. It looks like a handheld little thing. It's red and white. Just press this handheld's button for a smooth, safe edges. Hit the button again to stop it. The cutoff lid clings to a strong magnet. The cons. It requires four AA batteries, more than the other handhelds we tried below, which require only two batteries each. The next one is the Hamilton Beach Touch for $32, and that's black and looks kind of plain, actually. The pros. Push down the lever to cut, leaving smooth, safe edges around the top. This is the best countertop style we opened. Oh, it's a countertop thing that sits on a counter. The lever is the cons. The leather is a little stiff, not ideal for users with arthritis. Its short cord means it needs to sit close to an outlet. The Sharper Image One Touch for $40, and that's a cute little white thing. This handheld can opener has a strong magnetic grip on the lids and leaves a smooth, safe cut around the edges. The cons. This opener is loud and screechy, which was annoying to some of our at-home testers. Another countertop is the Cuisinart SC60 Deluxe for $48.50. This one is very quiet during use, and some consumers may prefer the sleek stainless steel design. The cons. It's pricey at close to $50. The lid grip is poor, and the opener leaves a sharp edges. The blade needs to be cleaned between uses. And then there's a little black one, as seen on TV, the Black Handy for $18. This opener has an automatic stop function. It stops when the can top has been cut completely. It also doesn't leave sharp edges. The cons are it sometimes stalled midway through a job. We also needed to fiddle with a dial to restart the opener a few times. Another countertop is the Oster at $15. While the price is the lowest of those testers, performance and safety are poor. We don't recommend it. The cons are we had trouble attaching cans. It dropped a partly open can during testing. It leaves crimped, sharp edges that could cut users. How to prevent your package theft. According to CR's September 2021 nationally representative survey of 2,341 U.S. adults, actually I included was that in that survey, 11% of Americans have had at least one package stolen from just outside their home in the past year. These shipping workarounds can help your goods away from thieves. For Amazon items, if packages have gone missing from your porch, try shipping your orders to a nearby Amazon hub locker or counter pickup location. Amazon hub lockers are self-serve lockers, and Amazon hub counters are staffed with associates. Amazon Prime members in select areas can also sign for Amazon Key and Garage Delivery, a service that gives Amazon delivery drivers access to your garage, but you'll need a $30 Chamberlain MyQ Smart Garage Control for it to work. CR staffers tried this in-garage delivery service, and it worked flawlessly. For UPS, FedEx, and USPS and United States Postal Service items, try being UPS My Choice tool, FedEx Delivery Manager, and USPS's delivery instructions, which lets you tell drivers to leave the package at a less conspicuous drop-off area such as a back door. FedEx and UPS also let you place a delivery hold if you're on vacation or reschedule delivery for a different day. Both also let you opt to ship to local FedEx or UPS stores, as well as specific pharmacies and grocery stores. Keep in mind that many retailers allow you to ship items to a walk-in store for pickup, which can also save you on shipping fees. The truth about cold remedies. And this is the hay fever season and cold season right now. The adults get an average of 2 to 3 colds per year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. This means a lot of time spent with a runny nose, sore throat, and more. So which remedies for these ills have actually proved to make us feel better and which haven't? Read on for answers. Remedy 1. Chicken soup. Some evidence suggests that soup may ease cold symptoms. One widely known study from the University of Nebraska, pulmonologist Stephen Renard, M.D., found that chicken vegetable soup inhibited the movement of white blood cells that trigger nasal congestion. Should you try it? Yes. Renard's findings are compelling, but the truth is that eating any type of hot soup will help hydrate you. That, in turn, can loosen mucus so that you can better expel it, says William Schaefer, M.D., professor of preventive medicine at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville, Tennessee. Remedy 2. Hot drinks. Many of us turn to drinks like tea to soothe a sore throat. When Cardiff University's Common Cold Center in Wales gave 30 cold and flu sufferers hot or tepid drinks, those who sipped hot beverages afforded more relief than those who sipped tepid ones. Should you try it? Yes. Tea and other hot drinks may soothe a sore throat and ease congestion. If you have a cough, it's also a good idea to try stirring some honey into your tea. Research also has shown that honey may help suppress a cough. Drinking fluids of all types keeps you hydrated, but it's best to stick with uncaffeinated drinks when possible and water. Remedy 3. Saltwater nasal rinses. In 2015, researchers looked at 5 studies on rinsing nasal passages with salt water. Only one, the largest of the 5, though, found that nasal rinses can ease stuffiness and reduce congestion. Should you try it? Maybe. A saltwater rinse may have some value, but steer clear of over-the-counter products labeled hypertonic. Some studies have found that these more concentrated solutions can irritate nasal passages. And if you also use a neti pot, a vessel you fill with warm water and salt, always use distilled or sterile water and clean it between uses. You can also boil tap water for 3 to 5 minutes and let it cool before use, says the Food and Drug Administration. Remedy 4. Zinc paste supplements and sprays. In 2020, consumers spent roughly $162 million on zinc supplements, which have long been touted as a way to feel better faster. But research results on their effectiveness have been mixed. Should you try it? Probably not. Though some studies do indicate that zinc may help shorten the duration of a cold, there's little to support that it eases symptoms, and taping it may lead to nausea. Besides that, sometimes it tastes horrible. And what's more, all supplements, zinc included, are not thoroughly regulated by the FDA, and because you don't always know exactly what's in them, they might interact with other medications you're taking. It's also wise to avoid zinc-based nasal sprays. They may permanently destroy your sense of smell. Is it a cold or COVID-19? The flu, colds, and COVID-19 all have similar symptoms, making them tough to self-diagnose. But it's important to find out whether you have COVID-19 early on so that you can get prompt treatment. So you can isolate and you can isolate yourself. If you have symptoms such as a fever, cough, chills, runny nose, and or congestion, get tested for COVID-19. Where to find healthy Mexican fast food? There's good news in Mexican-style chain restaurants. Some of the most popular, like Chipotle and even Taco Bell, are offering healthy options. Their meals can be built around nutritious ingredients like beans, veggies, and corn tortillas, says Amy Keating, RD, a CR nutritionist. And at some, you can customize your order with tofu, plant-based meats, and whole grains. But be aware that even if you include nutritious ingredients, your meal can be a sodium bomb with 1,000 calories or more, which isn't so good for you. Most adults consume only 1,800 to 26 calories and less than 23 milligrams of sodium a day. For instance, a burrito at Chipotle, chicken, black beans, brown rice, fajita veggies, guacamole, and salsa and flour tortillas contains 1,115 calories and 2,300 milligrams of sodium. To help you choose Mexican meals more wisely, we reviewed the menus at three chains and selected healthier dishes you can still enjoy. At Chipotle, a paleo salad bowl, and there's a picture of it, looks really good. It's got guacamole stacked on top of it. Contains guacamole, chicken, fajita veggies, tomato green chili salsa, a mix of romaine lettuce, baby kale, and baby spinach. It has 460 calories, 21 grams of fat, and et cetera, 20 grams of carbs. Why we like it? This bowl is the lowest sodium choice in the chain's lifestyle bowls, and even though it has 1,105 things. So, and it's packed with fiber and vitamins A and C. Has to go light on the salsa to cut an additional 130 milligrams of sodium. Also, their veggie burrito bowl contains guacamole, cilantro, lime brown rice, fajita vegetables, black beans, romaine, and lettuce. Has 595 calories, 29 grams of fat, 72 carbs, a lot of carbs, a lot of fiber, and 920 grams of sodium. Why we like it? This plant-based option is high in protein and fiber, thanks to the black beans. Opt for brown rice over white because it's whole grain and is higher in fiber. Qdoba, three street-style pulled pork corn tacos. Contains slow-braised pulled pork, corn tortillas, salsa verde, pico de gallo, and cojita cheese. Calories are 370, 13 grams of fat, 41 carbs, and 960 grams of milligrams of sodium. Why we like it? Corn tortillas are good for you, whole grain and are lower in calories and sodium than flour tortillas. These tacos offer filling protein, but their size keeps calorie in check. Kids' meal, quesadilla and a side of black beans. Contains chicken, flour, tortilla, cheese, and beans. 430 calories, 15 grams of fat, 50 carbs, and 890 milligrams of sodium. Why we like it? When you're craving something cheesy, kids' meals are a good pick, even for adults. The portion sizes are smaller yet filling, especially when you add high-in-fiber black beans. Taco Bell. Power bowl with chicken, with grilled chicken. And there's a cute picture of that. It's got guacamole, looks like big hunks of chicken, tomatoes, black beans, sour cream. Looks really good. Has 320 calories, 13 grams of fat, 27 carbs, and 1,000 milligrams of sodium. Why we like it? This bowl is filling but low in calories. Has to go easy on the cheese and sour cream sauce and rice to shave off calories as well as some saturated fat and sodium. Number two crunchy chicken tacos supreme. Contains chicken, reduced fat, sour cream, tomatoes, lettuce, cheese, crunchy tortilla. 340 calories, 16 grams of fat, 26 grams of carbs, and 660 milligrams of sodium. Why we like it? Crunchy equals fried, but in this case it's a better choice than the soft version on a white flour tortilla, which has more sodium, even though the other ingredients are the same. Recalls. To stay informed about recalls for vehicles, Read with Membership can use our free call track. Well, you're not in the members, but I am. Ford 150 trucks. Ford has announced the recall of nearly 185,000 F-150 pickup trucks from the 21 and 22 model years to fix an issue where the drive shaft may be damaged by loose parts. Heat and noise insulation panels could come loose and impact the aluminum drive shaft. The drive shaft could fracture, which may result in the truck losing power. The driver could lose control of the vehicle if the drive shaft comes in contact with the ground. In addition, if the driver parks the 150 without using the parking brake, the truck could roll away. The affected vehicles are the 4x4 145-inch wheelbase crew cab configurations with 302A and above equipment group and sound insulation package. What to do? Ford will notify owners of affected vehicles, but owners may all contact Ford at 866-436-7332. DeWalt earphones. E. Filiot is recalling about 301,000 DeWalt JobSite Pro wireless earphones because they can overheat while charging or in use, posing burn and fire hazards. The wireless earphones were sold at Home Depot, Lowe's, and other electronics stores and hardware stores, and online at CyberGuys from December 2019 through July 2021 for about $60. Stop using the earphones. Contact eFiliate at 888-979-4439 or go to affiliate.com/notices/DMXA. Bed rail recalls. Drive Devilbiss bed assist handles and rails. DeVis Healthcare is recalling about 500,000 bed assist handles and bed assist rails because when they're attached to an adult's bed, the user can become entrapped between the bed rail or between the rail and the side of the mattress. This poses a serious entrapment hazard and risk of death by asphyxiation. Similar bed rail products from other brands below have also been recalled for similar hazards. So far, two deaths have been reported. Ooh, the bed rails were sold at medical supply stores and online at Amazon and Walmart from October 2007 through December 2021 for $30 to $80. Stop using these products and contact Drive Devilbiss Healthcare at 877-467-3099 to get a full refund. Endurance bed rails. Essential Medical Supply is recalling about 270,000 Endurance hand bed rails. Because they're attached to a bed, the user can become entrapped within the bed rail or between the rail and the side of the mattress. Once again, this poses a serious entrapment hazard and risk of death by asphyxiation. So far, I'm having trouble pronouncing that. So far, one death has been reported. The rails were sold at medical supply stores and online at Amazon and Walmart from October 2006 to December 2021 for $36 to $98. Stop using the rail. Essential Medical Supply will provide a prorated refund for bed rails sold or imported after November 1, 2015. Based on the age of the bed rail. The company is not offering a rimmer for older bed rails. If you have rails sold between October 2006 and October 2015, stop using, disassemble, and dispose of them. Call Essential Medical Supply at 888-856-0111 or go to essentialmedicalsupply.com. Products recall for details. And the Carex bed rails last. Compass Health Brands are recalling about 104,000 Carex brand bed support rails. Easy to use up in 2-to-1 bed rails. Because they can attach to a bed, the user can become entrapped within the rail and between the rail and the side of the mattress, the same thing as all the others. So far, 3 deaths have been reported. The bed rails are sold at medical supply stores on Amazon, Carex.com, and Walmart from November 2012 through December for 2021 from $22 to $80. Stop using the bed rails and contact Compass Health Brands at 888-571-2710 or go to compasshealthbrands.com for details to get a free repair kit for the bed fill or a refund for the Easy Up 2-in-1 rail. And March is also the bed. Well, we're out of March. We're into April. Replacement windows, string trimmers, and vacuum cleaners. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to kind of skip some sections here and go to an area on there doing a thing on Ultimate Stain Removal Guide. And we'll read a couple of these, and we'll come back to those later on when we have another time. How about a stain-stopping toolkit? Speeding treatment can help prevent stains from becoming permanent, but it's hard to be quick if you don't have the right supplies. Keep these essential tools at ready to ensure you're always prepared. Plain white paper towels or cloths. Perfect for blotting up spills, there's no worry that a dye will transfer from fabric or paper and make an already bad situation worse. Enzymatic laundry pre-treat. These make a huge difference. They really break down organic stains, says Jesse Eck, Digital Communications Director at American Cleaning Institute. Cotton swabs. These are great for testing the safi of a stain remover on fabric. A swab lets you dab the product on a small or hard-to-reach area of upholstery. Upholstery cleaner and or dry cleaning liquid. Because you can't throw your sofa or dining chair seats into the washer, a targeted stain lift, Picrin is one example, may save the day. Acetone nail polish removal. This solvent does a remarkable job on some mishaps, like makeup and superglue, but don't use it on synthetic fabrics that could damage them. Detergent solution. Mix 1 teaspoon of a mild, white, or clear dishwashing liquid, Dawn is often recommended, no bleach, in 1 cup of warm water. Baking soda and cornstarch. Each of these absorbent materials is excellent for soaking up a greasy spill. ammonia bleach, and plain white vinegar. These liquids can be useful in a few stain emergencies, but don't mix them. Three stain removal mistakes not to make. Drying a stain. Heat can set a stain, often permanently, so check to see whether the spot has come out before the item in the dryer. You may need to put it through the wash a few more times. But if you don't notice the stain in time, all may not be lost. Some people report success with repeating the pre-treat wash steps even after drying. Using chlorine bleach on everything. This liquid is not safe for all fabrics. Use it on some colored items and it may help wash away the stain. But it's also likely to remove the fabric's hue as well, leaving them unsalvageable. Adding too much detergent. With today's concentrated laundry detergents, a little goes a long way. Use too much and it can build up on fabrics, making them dingy. Washers have an extra rinse, rise, and spin, or even a soak cycle to safely remove residual detergent. How about a couple jokes to close out the day? One of McDonald's staff just told me they didn't know who the Grimace was, and my brain went haywire, and I blurted out, "He works here?" How to appear smart in business meetings. If someone says about 25% of all users click on the button, quickly chime in, "So what about 1 in 4? Everyone will nod their heads in agreement, secretly envious of your quick math skills. There comes a point in most meetings when everyone is chiming in except you. This is a great point to go, guys, can we take a step back here? Follow up with a quick, what problem are we really trying to solve? And boom, you brought yourself another hour of looking smart. After the engineer utters his divine words, chime in with, let me just repeat that, and repeat exactly what he just said. Now his brilliance has been transferred to you. Ask, will this scale? No matter what it is, no matter one really knows what that means, but it's a good catch-all question. Ask the presenter to go back a slide. It doesn't matter where in the presentation you shout this out. It'll immediately look like you look as if you're paying closer attention than everyone else is. One for the record books. The longest drum solo was 10 hours and 26 minutes and was performed by a child sitting behind me on Delta Flight 963 from Los Angeles to Tokyo. Been there, done that. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.